Hello, and welcome to another brilliant edition of Flying Clubs Radio. I'm Drew, and I'm joined by my co-host, Steve. What's been going on, Steve?
Hi, Drew, and hello, Flying Clubs Radio listeners. Well, busy, busy with end of summer events and outreach, safety seminars, working to help new clubs get started, and so on. And, you know, I say I'm really enjoying living in Central Oregon. The climate is wonderful, as is the flying. And I'm making good strides in developing my aviation network with new friends and new opportunities.
So, Steve, I see that this episode is about insurance revisited. We did two radio shows on insurance some time ago. So has something changed? Are we seeing movement in the aviation insurance marketplace?
Well, it's not so much that anything has changed, which actually is truly unfortunate. But time has passed, and we're all somewhat now used to, but not really accepting of, the market shenanigans of the aviation insurance industry. Nevertheless, we continue to hear from clubs whose insurance premiums have skyrocketed, and in some cases, clubs tell us that they have all of a sudden become uninsurable. On the other hand, many clubs seem to be quite happy with their insurance situation, so it seems as though there are multiple issues as well as multiple opportunities to influence insurance premiums. Our understanding has also matured over the past 2 to 3 years, and we're better positioned to advise flying clubs on how to take back control of spiraling insurance premiums and to put the reality of 2023 prices into perspective. As you mentioned, Drew, we've recorded two previous radio shows on the topic of insurance, but it is definitely a topic that requires revisiting, probably on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah, I have to say we do seem to have an increasing flow of calls and emails regarding insurance, as well as the hangar shortage problem. So from that measure alone, these are major issues that are affecting our members.
Yeah, indeed. And that's my point when I say it's rather unfortunate. Websites are full of other issues affecting our industry, but it seems like no one with any real clout is speaking up about the issues of spiraling insurance premiums and the way that the very few aviation underwriters are squeezing out and in some cases strangling the growth of GA, including, I would argue, aircraft sales. It is an odd business model if you think about it. Price people out of your market or just refuse to sell them a product at all. It is rather strange. Now, we know enough to realize that there are often wider and deeper stories behind each premium increase or refusal to insure a flying club. But we have to remember that insurance is a business. If clubs have shown themselves to be risky propositions by having multiple claims, then this smacks of ineffective safety systems, and they won't be able to get insurance until they shape up. And no amount of the whiny, someone should do something, is going to change that. Now, this is leading us nicely towards what can be done. I do think that member organizations with hundreds of thousands of members should be doing more about this situation, since insurance affects aircraft sales, which affects flying, which affects pilots, and these are the members of pilot organizations. In my not so humble opinion, the spiraling of insurance premium is as existentially important to GA as the unleaded fuel situation and the shortage of hangars. Any one of these issues weakens general aviation, but all three at the same time is really troubling.
All right, so let's get back to insurance.
Yeah, insurance. Let's move to the crux of this episode, which is how we, the Flying Clubs community, collectively can do something that was within our remit and control.
All right, I did it. We're back on track, folks.
Hey, we were never really that far off, were we? Anyway. Firstly, just like with your financial advisor, doctor, dentist, CFI, it is important to develop a relationship with your insurance agent, who will then be better able to represent you to the quite small group of aviation underwriters. Remember that most insurance companies are actually brokers. They shop you around the underwriters to get the best deal for you and, of course, for themselves. Any club that simply renews their policy every year is doing a great disservice to their members. Now, aviation insurance is very different from auto insurance, where there are multiple players and options. Many of us succumb to the siren song of the gecko or the emu or that funny little chap in army kit, and then we call up several companies to get what we hope will be competitive quotes. Not so in the aviation world, where everyone knows when you're in the market. The pathway to underwriters is through the brokers, and they all have the same access to the same underwriters. There's really nothing to gain by trying different brokers. In fact, there's a lot to lose, as you'll be starting from scratch with a new broker who may have a different favorite underwriter, and neither knows much about you, apart from you being a new prospect. So develop a relationship with your broker. And the most important way for you to do that is to actually talk with them. Yeah, emailing forms is convenient, but if you expect your broker to work for you, they have to know you, the person, not the paper. Here's what we suggest. Well before the renewal date, even before you get the renewal notice, call up your broker. In the bigger companies, call a named person, not just the next available agent. You may have to wait for a callback, but it will be worth it. You have just become their client who will help their commission. Explain very clearly what has changed in the past year, and things definitely will have changed. Perhaps you have a new member or two. Perhaps members have earned their instrument or other ratings or certificates. Perhaps the safety officer has stepped up to becoming a fast team representative and now is conducting ground and flight seminars and giving wings credit. Or perhaps the club has instigated an updated new member induction program, including aircraft quizzes and detailed flight checkouts. Also, presumably members will have flown the plane, so that they will have accumulated more hours. You get the point. Things will have changed, so ensure that your broker knows all of the details.
Remember that insurance premiums are based on risk. Everything that drives up the risk profile of a club will result in more expensive premiums, or in the extreme, denial of coverage. So what are these risk factors? Members listed on the flying roster who haven't flown in the last year or more, or fly just the equivalent of a couple of hours per month, will drive up premiums. People not flying are a riskier proposition than those that do fly, as presumably, they are more proficient. We'll poke around at that word presumably a bit later. But the point is that you're trying to get insurance for a flying club, and members who don't fly, or worse, might fly, are pretty risky. There are a couple of solutions to this. Remember that this is a flying club. The whole point here is that members fly. You could require that all members fly a stated minimum number of hours per month. If they don't, then they will be moved to non-flying status and will be removed from the club's insurance roster. This will give room the club will then have to go through the equivalent of a new member checkout to get that member back to flying status. If it is clear that a member will never fly as PIC again, then move them to a social membership where they can enjoy the social side of the club, but without affecting club insurance. See the June 2022 Club Connector Newsletter Question of the Month article for more information on social memberships.
Yeah, good point, Drew. I like the idea of moving non-flyers to social memberships, as it keeps them involved in the club, it allows them to act as mentors, and lowers the insurance risk. It also opens up a flying membership slot for a new member who wants to fly. Win-win all around. Another factor that greatly influences insurance premiums is aircraft valuation. We all like to think that our planes are worth more than the average, and indeed the price of aircraft have steadily increased year over year. It makes perfect sense to set the hull coverage, that is the replacement value, at a level that will allow for an equivalent plane if yours was total for any reason. But don't try to make money on that eventuality. Firstly, insurance companies have a pretty good idea of what planes are worth. And secondly, you'll pay a lot more for higher hull coverage. It turns out that around 70% of the total premium is for hull coverage, so be sensible. On that topic, we've been hearing more and more from clubs who are thinking about self-insuring. Let's be clear about this. Every club must, often by state and or airport regulations, carry liability insurance. And not to do so would be foolish in the extreme. If anything happened and the club was sued, all members could be fair game for the plaintiff's lawyers. So self-insuring actually means that the club, by extension all members, accept the risk of replacing the aeroplane. Perhaps the club has sufficient reserves to purchase a replacement, or perhaps the bylaws state that members will be equally assessed to cover the cost of a new acquisition. Either way, be really sure that members understand and that they all agree by unanimous vote to go down this path before something happens.
As the cost of club insurance climbs ever higher, we're hearing from many clubs that are thinking about transferring the cost of insurance directly onto members by requiring that members carry renters, which is more correctly called non-owned insurance. There are many things wrong with this idea. Number one, insurance is a fixed cost. Members equally contribute to fixed costs by paying monthly dues, so they are already paying for club insurance. Number two, in all cases we have seen, club insurance per member is a lot cheaper than each member getting individual insurance, even if they can get it, coming up next. Number three, we hear from some board members about the outrageous cost of club insurance, so to speak, but this needs to be put in perspective. Let's say club insurance is $5,000 per year for a 10-member club. That's $500 per year, which is $43 per month per member. That's probably cheaper than members pay for auto insurance. Yes, $5,000 is a lot of money, but it's a pretty good value per member to insure an airplane. Number four, members of equity clubs by definition are co-owners. They can't be owners and non-owners at the same time. Some insurance companies allow people to take non-owned coverage as long as they don't own more than 20% of an airplane, which would work if there were six or more members in the club. Whether this coverage applies to the club plane or whether it applies to non-club planes that members rent from an FBO, for example, is open to interpretation and so must be clarified in writing and in plain English by the insurance company. Members of non-equity clubs could perhaps better argue that neither the club nor its members own the plane, so they should be able to get individual non-owned insurance. Perhaps, but remember that an FAA rule regarding non-equity clubs states that the club has owner-like powers over the airplane for the duration of the exclusive lease. Claiming non-ownership for insurance purposes seems to be rather, well, two-faced.
So let's switch and talk about proficiency. It used to be that pilots would strive for proficiency in order to become better, a matter of pride. More recently, data from the Air Safety Institute's NAL report, as well as from FAA, NTSB, Aviation Safety, and many others, unanimously agree that lack of proficiency is a leading cause of accidents, many of them being fatal. So it should be no great surprise that insurance companies are interested in the proficiency of all club members. The problem is that there's no proficiency meter, a proficiometer, if you like. So as with all things that are difficult to directly measure, we have to make do with surrogates. And the artificial measure used for proficiency is hours flown in a given period of time. It makes sense that if people fly more, then they're more practiced. But whether they're more proficient or are growing in proficiency is a matter of debate. They could be flying the same 2 hours every time they go up and are not really learning anything new. But at least they took off and landed, albeit with nobody judging their ability. Now, insurance companies require a roster of members at every renewal. Makes sense, as this contains the members' names, dates of birth, in other words, their age, hours flown total, hours flown in the past 12 months, time and type, and certificates and ratings. We could assume that the receiving broker would compare this latest roster with the previous one to determine if new members have joined and by how much people are actually flying. As we've indicated earlier, don't just assume. Speak with your broker and follow up with an email giving details about new members, new ratings, and so on. But don't stop there. The hour-based proficiometer doesn't know about the quality of the hours flown, and neither will your broker unless you tell them. As a CFI conducting flight reviews, I see this all the time. People may have many hours but still lack proficiency, and 1 hour of ground and 1 hour of flight just won't hack it for these clients. So if people don't fly, there will be a strong correlation with lack of proficiency. But just because people do fly, it doesn't mean they're proficient. Clearly, we need to do more to explain why we're a good club to insure. Some insurance companies may mandate that members fly at least a certain number of hours, or that members must receive annual training in order to remain insured. This certainly applies to more sophisticated aircraft such as Cirrus and Bonanzas, but even then, there are ways to go beyond the minimums to help insurance companies know you are a safe club. There are probably many ways to go about this, but in my book, there's only one that can really count, and that's the FAA WINGS program. The FAA provides a general aviation pilot proficiency program as part of its FAST team outreach. If all members fly 3 WINGS flight activities and take 3 knowledge activities in a 12-month period, they earn a phase of WINGS, which, with the correct endorsements, is equivalent to a flight review. I call this the progressive flight review, as it can be spread out over a year and involves 3 flights in that year with a CFI, rather than 1 flight every 24 calendar months. Best of all, the flights, the phases, the flight reviews, and so on are recorded in the FAASafety.gov system. Providing WINGS transcripts for every member, which will have the FAA safety team stamped all over them, along with your renewal paperwork and roster, will go a long way to demonstrate that your club is a safe club. We highly encourage this approach, and we've heard of safe club discounts being as much as 25%. Yeah, do the math.
On the topic of the WINGS program, there's another situation in which clubs can take advantage of the FAA safety moniker, and that is after an insurance claim. Whatever the reason for the claim, it is vital that a club provides information to the insurer about what they will change to prevent claims in the future. Behind every claim, there is a story, and clubs must investigate to get to the root cause, and then share a plan of action with the insurance company. Basing a plan on the FAA program, or increasing the commitment to the program, will go a long way to persuade the insurance company that you have things under control, but expect to pay more, at least until you've proven that you do indeed have things under control. On a related point, we often get asked about who should pay the deductible or who should pay for increases in premiums after an insurance claim. To us, the answer is easy. The person responsible for whatever caused the claim. That's how it is for sole ownership, and that's how it should be for shared ownership. Multiple claims are, however, a whole different story. We sometimes get calls from desperate club officers telling us that, out of the blue, their insurance will not be renewed. We know now to keep asking questions to get to the real story. This is just like the five whys of any root cause analysis. Keep asking why until, and then by the fifth layer, you'll be close to the truth. The fact is that anyone or any club with multiple insurance claims is in big trouble. Perhaps the claims were very different, and it was just a bad coincidence. But coincidence and risk management rarely go well together. Again, putting in place a comprehensive and credible action plan may be the only thing that can help in such a situation. But of course, the plan has to work, as proven by no more claims. Two situations that pretty much guarantee that a club will be uninsurable are accidents involving fatalities and any unforgivable sins, such as running out of fuel and pilot gross negligence. In these cases, the club may have to disband and reform as a new entity without the negligent pilots. Before going down that path, have a frank discussion with Frank, your insurance agent. Let them know that Bruno is no longer in the club and that you have put in place stricter safety policies to prevent a repeat of whatever caused the claims.
Yeah, that last one is really quite tough and is another reason why pilot proficiency programs are so important, not only for lower insurance costs, but to keep us alive. On that topic of a club disbanding, I want to take a couple of minutes to put the record straight regarding tax-exempt clubs. On at least two occasions recently when counselling clubs are being forced to disband, officers woefully tell me that as tax-exempt entities, the rules say they must disperse their assets, including their planes, to other tax-exempt entities. Apart from one very particular case which should never apply to social hobby flying clubs, this is completely incorrect and, in fact, complete balderdash. As we've preached many times before, if a flying club decides to apply for tax exemption, then it must be as a 501c7 social club and not as a 501c3 charity. Don't be swayed by the completely incorrect videos that suggest a flying club can be considered as an educational charity. This is wrong, plain and simple.
Along with claims, lack of proficiency, and unforgivable sins, there are several other things that drive up insurance premiums, and these are in the direct control of clubs and members. Let's list them. First, tailwheel aircraft. Clubs with tailwheel aircraft attract members who want to get the endorsement. In other words, they can be low-time dragger pilots. The solution for such clubs is to require that members have sufficient hours, total time, and type to satisfy the insurance company. And do this before you buy that lovely Citabria. Contrary to popular opinion, flying clubs should not be single-handedly trying to solve the country's aviation problems. Let the flight schools take care of training. Then clubs can provide the opportunity for shared access to planes such as tail draggers. Even then, expect to pay more for insurance. Number two, sophisticated aircraft. Yes, the club members may all agree that they would love a Bonanza to supplement the club's existing Cessna 150, but do the homework on insurance before buying it. Number three, anything that costs more to repair will incur higher insurance. Planes with retractable gear, twin engines, antiques, planes with poor insurance history, odd types with no insurance history, and so on. This and the fact that they do many things quite well is the reason many clubs operate Cessna 172s and PA-28s. Number four, student pilots. Why any club allows this aircraft to be used for primary training is a mystery to me. Students drive up insurance rates, but also maintenance. And the rest of the membership is fully subsidizing them. Flying clubs are not places to learn to fly. Send them to a local flight school and then welcome them back as a certificated pilot. Number five, old people. Let me hand this one off to you, Steve, as you are getting up there quite a bit.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Drew. So I have no answer for why the clock goes from 11:59:59 to 12 midnight on the eve of your 75th birthday, and suddenly you become a bigger risk than 1 second ago. This is complete nonsense, but it's what insurance companies will think unless you get ahead of their game. For whatever the reason, there is no data, and there's no data actually to support it. Insurance will increase when you turn 75, then 80, then what other ages. Are they trying to tell you something? Well, maybe, but again, a little bit of preparation can go a long way. As you get close to one of these trigger ages, accept the fact that you're probably not as nimble in mind and body, and maybe you should sign up for proficiency and recurrent training on a more regular basis. Tell the insurance company about the steps you are taking to stay fit and safe. Do a flight review every year. Fly phases of wings and so on. If you do nothing, then all they know about you is that, well, you're old, and they will assume that you're doing nothing to stay fit and safe. The case of flying clubs with older members should be no different. If older club members do nothing other than complain to make their case to the insurance companies, then they should be required to pay due surcharges to cover additional insurance premiums. By participating in the club safety program, they and all members will benefit from insurance discounts. So there you have it, Insurance Revisited. In a nutshell, to take control over insurance, number one, it is what it is until we pressure our membership organizations to take a solid stand on aviation insurance. Whilst you're at it, add in the lack of hangerage for good measures. Number two, no primary training in flying clubs. Your choice, but your consequences. Number three, require that members fly a reasonable number of hours per month, or move them to a social membership, or terminate their memberships completely. Flying clubs are for people who fly, after all. Number four, develop a solid working relationship with your insurance broker. Work with the same person year after year. Number five, put in place and support a rigorous club proficiency program. You'll be hard-pressed to find anything better than the FAA Wings program. Read and hear more about Wings for Clubs in our Club Connector newsletter and other Flying Clubs radio editions. People will moan about the cost of flying three times a year with a CFI. Well, do the math, calculate the per member savings due to that Safe Club insurance discount, and this will then be reflected in lower monthly dues. Push the safety officer and perhaps one other to sign up as a Fast Team safety rep. You then control your own Wings classes, credits and flights. Share the love, invite all the pilots, all local pilots actually, to your safety events. Perhaps that will also lower these instances of 13 miles straight in for runway 34 or 10 mile right base runway 39, which, as you can all guess, probably has a left standard pattern. Put things into perspective. We all fly aeroplanes, so we should expect insurance to reflect that risk. But let's do everything we can to run safe clubs with all members flying to the same rulebook and required levels of proficiency, including courtesy and integrity. Enforce your club rules. Change the world. Stamp out selfishness and entitlement. Number eight, hold mandatory monthly safety programs. Hold a backup session for people who really can't make it. If they miss two, well, automatically put them on the not in good standing list and remove their flying privileges until they catch up with the program. So a lot to think about there in Insurance Revisited, but that's all we have for now. It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.